The following episode deals with explicit descriptions of violence that can be disturbing or distressing to some listeners. These include descriptions of murder and torture, possible mentions of death, suicide, and rape, and sound effects that recall violence and gunfire. If you want to skip these parts of the podcast, timestamps with specific trigger warnings can be found on our website or on the description section. Please be advised. On February 17, 1981, Pope John Paul II visited the Philippines. It was the first time any pope had visited the Philippines, one of the most robustly Catholic countries in the world for the past 300 years. So people were practically feral with anticipation. Merch with the pope sold on every street corner, tickets to see him sold out left and right, people were camping out on the streets to see him. There was one rather big problem though. It was martial law. And aside from camping in the streets, people were also dying on them. Thanks for joining us today. This is Yugto, a podcast where we get angry, tranquil but angry, about Philippine history. We continue this season's theme, the martyrs of martial law, those whose stories are often denigrated by politicians today as lies. Today specifically, we are getting mad at all the Catholics who have ever supported Marcos, as he was blatantly murdering and torturing people left and right, knowing full well there was no excuse for what he was doing. Proof. Remember when Marcos, in a blatantly superficial move, decided he would lift martial law, just so he wouldn't be too embarrassed in front of the Pope? This is because he knew that martial law was seen as a great evil by people all over the world, most especially by the Vatican and the Italian government, who had seen how priests, nuns, and missionaries had been murdered left and right by his regime. The Pope was not a fool. He knew full well about the horrors of the Marcos regime. So when he got to the Philippines, to much fanfare and applause, he declined staying in the ostentatious coconut palace Imelda had built for him, effectively embarrassing her. He kept in the company of Cardinal Sin, someone vocally against the Marcoses and martial law. In the end, Pope John Paul II even said in a speech, in front of countless Filipinos and the Marcoses themselves, "Legitimate concern for the security of a nation could lead to the temptations of subjugating to the state the human being and his or her dignity and rights. It cannot claim to serve the common good when human rights are not safeguarded." I'm paraphrasing, and there's a ton of big words in there, but translation, he was basically saying acting to protect the state from communists can't be an excuse to be a monster to your own people. If you continue doing this, then you are probably beyond forgiveness. The Pope's influence and naming and shaming did little to sway Marcos's cold soul in the end. Marcos reinstated martial law not long after Pope John Paul II departed. Several years later, Pope John Paul II would again find himself saying the name of a religious man dead in the Philippines, Father Tulio Favalli of the PIME Fathers. It is 1946, and a future martyr is born. Tullio Favalli came from Sustinente, Mantova, northern Italy. He was an Italian priest. Like many before him and many more after him, he was quite apprehensive about his calling. He actually left the seminary and worked in the military and as a welder for a little while, since he was so conflicted about the rightness of his vocation. However, eventually his experiences in training and his fellow workers convincing him that there was a need for there to fight injustice and provide aid from within the church appealed to his sense of Catholic belief. Thus, he became a priest for real, and with a special missionary vocation, as part of the Pontifical Institute for the Foreign Missions, or PIME or Pime. Tulio Favalli ended up in the Philippines, a place where workers' rights were being grossly overlooked due to Marcos's cronyism. Retrospectively, Father Mariani, his friend who helped train him and who encouraged him to go where he was needed most, recalled, "Without knowing it, I sent him to his martyrdom." Favalli knew that he was not going anywhere safe, but he appreciated this. He knew that missionaries are not meant to go to places that are safe after all. He knows the life of the missionary is supposed to be hard, challenging. Favalli notes that the Philippines is experiencing martial law, and that's bad enough. But he also knows that he is going to the most tumultuous region of the Philippines, the southern island Mindanao, where feudal politics and different religions and fights were still very much the norm. Even Tulunan, the specific region he was going to, didn't have a good reputation. It was not a peaceful place. 1972 saw dispute over lands escalating to violent proportions all across the region, intensified by religious and political contexts. Over the period of martial law, a gang called the Ilaga, under the ownership of the Manero brothers, only made things worse in Tulunan. Originally, they claimed that their forces were necessary to defend Catholics against Muslims, or regular people against the communist threat. All sounded well and good. But then soon they began to not just defend, but outright murder and torture the people that they were against. Things only became worse when the Ilagas officially affiliated themselves with the civil forces of the Marcos regime. They had implicit support in a lack of arrests over their violent ways, and they saw explicit support in the form of more men joining them and in the provision of weapons and guns. Then, the Ilaga went on to exert more control. They terrorized the people that they were supposed to be protecting. The threat hung over everyone's heads. Anybody could be called a communist and dragged out and shot in broad daylight. Because of this, no one could mess with the Ilaga or the Manero brothers. They were free to drink and destroy as they pleased. Not government-sanctioned violence, maybe. There was nothing on paper saying they could do what they wanted. But definitely government condoned and government excused. Even more so because the violence that they wreaked was convenient to the various agendas of the Marcos regime and the cronies that worked under it. It was in this time and in this place that Favalli lived out his missionary life. He stayed in the diocese with another missionary, Father Geremia. In their tiny church in this area of mixed religions, they administered mass, helped the local farmers, helped heal the physical and psychological wounds of those who had fallen on the Manero's bad side. Story goes that Father Favalli kept a photograph of two soldiers standing over a dead body at his bedside. Kind of grim. We could only speculate why. Perhaps to remind him of the violence going on right outside his door? Did he know, perhaps, that one day he would end up just like the fallen figure in his photo? On April 11, Favalli's door was practically knocked down by desperate townspeople. The Manero brothers and around 50 men had gathered on the main road near the Tulunan neighborhood, brandishing guns and smelling like alcohol. The usual. However, what was unusual and quite scary was they had hung up a list of communist guerrilla allies. They fully announced their intention to snuff these people out. As usual, they did not need proof to be able to call these people communists. What was important is that these people were shot before the day was through. Father Geremia's name was on the list. Father Favalli's was not. A man named Rufino Robles happened to be passing by at this time, maybe on his way home. He saw his name on the list, and immediately knowing that that would mean the end of his life, broke out into a run. The Minettos pursued, hooting, hollering, shooting at him. Like all of it was a game. Robles took shelter in a house, where they barred the Mineros from entering. The Mineros didn't mind. They were having the time of their lives. They were shooting at the air, making jokes and threats, swigging more alcohol, and waiting for their victims to come out. So someone from the town ran to Favalli to get help. They pleaded for him to intervene. Favalli might have been intimidated. The Mineros were men who would shoot at will, and he was just a missionary, a priest from Italy who barely had control of the local language and who had no martial abilities. But Favalli had a calling. He had a vocation. He knew what he had to do. Like some kind of movie character, he hopped onto his motorcycle and rushed the scene. Manero and his crew were likely drunker by the time Favalli arrived. They had their guns out, but initially did not do anything. Perhaps one of the men recognized that Favalli was not Father Geremia and therefore wasn't worth messing with, at least for a minute or so. Favalli entered the house, saw to the wounded, saw that more people had joined in hiding. They were trapped here, rats in a hole. The situation was dire and dangerous. He planned to defuse the situation. But outside, you can imagine it was not about defusing. Rather, the opposite. Fed up with the situation, the men decided that one priest was as good as the other. The men poured gasoline over Favalli's motorcycle, lit a match, and set fire to it. The contraption immediately went up, sending sparks into the air, casting shadows all around. Alarmed, Favalli rushed out. "What have you done to my motorcycle?" he cried out in disbelief. With cold amusement, Edalberto, who had been the one to pour the gasoline, replied, "Father, do you want your head blown off?" Favalli's eyes likely went wide at this statement. He opened his mouth to say something in fear and indignation, maybe in an attempt to bargain or calm the situation. But Edalberto Manero did not wait for a reply. He placed his gun right smack dab in the middle of Favalli's forehead and pulled that trigger. Point blank. Favalli was dead before he even likely knew what was happening. He keeled over backwards, blood exploding out of the back of his skull, to the horrified screams of everyone taking shelter in the house behind him. Favalli's dead body hit the ground, redness pooling all around a mouth that was dedicated to prayer and diplomacy, a mouth that would never speak again. Manero was only entertained by the fear that had grown stronger in the air now. He shot Favalli's corpse once more, theatrically, wanting to make sure that everyone in the house would have no doubt of what had just happened. Then he invited the rest of his men to empty their guns into the corpse. They did so, the gunshots harmonizing with their laughter, their hollering, against the crackling fire from the exploding motorcycle. However, Manero wasn't done yet. He was here to sow discord, to cause a scene, to make these people too afraid to ever do anything ever again. Against them, the Ilaga, or against Marcos's regime. In full view of the onlookers, Manero kicked and stomped Favalli's head. He crushed Favalli's skull under his feet, reducing it to nothing but pulp. Then he took his boots to the rest of Favalli's body, kicking it, stomping on it, jumping on it, as it yielded no resistance. Bones that no longer had any use cracked under Manero's weight. Onlookers who had experienced nothing but kindness by Favalli were frozen in horror. Manero's man laughed and laughed. Maybe in a fit of drunkenness, maybe just to further the fear they had instilled so successfully, it is rumored that Manero and maybe his men even scooped up some of Favalli's brains and gobbled them up. Favalli was not some nobody that the Marcos regime could just spirit away with no consequence. His death and the brutal circumstance reached not just the ears of the countless students and families in Manila who hated Marcos already. No, the story reached across the sea, to Favalli's home country and the home base of his missionary movement. From there, the story reached the entire world. By killing this missionary, the entire world began to look in earnest at the Philippines, and they were disgusted by what they saw. A dictator who encouraged extrajudicial killings by military men, who actively encouraged violence in the streets, and who hand-waved death and torture by saying it was necessary against communist threats. A wife who had ridiculous amounts of cash she was dropping on shopping trips abroad when the rest of the country was drowning in an economic crisis. The Marcos government worked against the clock to spin the story. They tried claiming Favalli was subversive and working against the government, an excuse they used often to arrest, like with Ninoy Aquino himself. They printed blatant falsehoods, saying that Favalli was a member of the NPA, the communists, and that the communists themselves were the ones who killed Favalli for not abiding by their code. Father Mariani, Favalli's mentor who had encouraged him to go to the Philippines, worked hard to make sure that the local news was not winning the propaganda war. He worked with Cardinal Jaime Sin of Manila. They celebrated a solemn mass of suffrage for Father Favalli in front of hundreds of priests, religious, and lay people. In his homily, Cardinal Sin made it clear that the Marcos regime must be condemned. Across the sea, the Vatican and Italian government echoed these statements. Pope John Paul II himself, during a general audience at the Vatican, described Favalli as having dedicated his life to the most needy and suffering in distant lands. The Pope vocally mourned him, unsettling Marcos's home base. The communists are to blame story did not fly with international secular outlets either. International outlets sussed the truth out themselves. They reported that the culprits were defense forces linked to the government, as proven by the Manero brothers using specific types of guns that could only be obtained through collaboration with the Marcos regime. They talked about how Favalli was just defending a family, how they mistreated his body after they shot him, how the Maneros laughed as they did it all, and how the government didn't seem to be doing anything about it. International outlets talked about how Favalli's murder was just one of the many paramilitary abuses that was going on around the Philippines. The international scrutiny became impossible to escape, and the government ended up having to act to try to save face. Instead of fading into the background as many gunmen and murderers, including Arturo Castillo, did, the Manero brothers were arrested. However, never let it be said that Marcos and his cronies don't treat their men well. The Maneros were apparently still seen in public every so often, even if they were supposedly in jail. This lines up. After all, they weren't arrested because what they did was seen as wrong by the government. They were only there because the Marcoses were getting embarrassed. It's January 17, 1981, shortly before the visit of Pope John Paul II. Martial law is lifted by President Marcos, and surely plenty of people were happy about this, hopeful that change was going to come. However, Marcos retained virtually all of his executive powers. Using the 1972 constitution that was written in his interest, and various decrees that he had set out before he had supposedly lifted martial law, he had all the excuses he needed to retain power anyway, until he was finally removed from office in 1986, after the People Power Revolution. When Cardinal Sin was lamenting with Father Mariani after Favalli's death, He said, "It seems like priests and especially missionaries were always in trouble in the Philippines." The only thing Father Mariani could say in reply was that maybe it was because they were always on the side of the poor. In Negros, Australian missionary Catholic Father Brian Gore and Irish missionary Father Niall O'Brien were accused of killing a mayor and being subversive to the Marcos regime. They were arrested along with seven others and were stuck in jail without a hearing for many, many months. Father Nilo Valerio supported the people of Abra fighting for their ancestral land, kind of like Makliing in the Cordillera region, except Father Nilo was just a priest. Marcos said a crony of his could have the land for his development. So the solution? Father Nilo was tortured and beheaded, his head placed on a spike and paraded across different towns. Father Zacharias Agatep condemned the monopolies of Marcos's cronies in various industries. He said that these monopolies undoubtedly made Ilocos Sur and Marcos's favorite places richer, while making the poorest of the country poorer. He was arrested, and after being released later on, an unidentified gunman shot him four times in the back of the head in 1982. Trifonio Andres was a seminarian. While attending a wedding in 1983, 50 soldiers barged in, claiming that they were looking for communists. They arrested him and 15 others, tying him up like a pig, hands and feet together. With his eyes and mouth taped shut, his body was found with gunshot wounds and with signs of torture all over his body. These are the bloody footprints that will never wash away. Though many pretended they couldn't see them, or that somehow they were worth it to get the Philippines to where it needed to go. We still see those footprints today. We walk those same steps. We remember all the people, no matter their religion or vocation, whose bodies were found with gunshots when all they wanted to do was help each of us survive those terrible martial law days. Marcos was not ignorant of these murders and in fact endorsed them when they were convenient to him or his cronies. It wasn't one of those, "If I had known Favalli was in danger, I would have intervened." No. If martial law was not wrong, like many apologists claim today, there would have been no need to lift it prior to the coming of the Pope. It was only lifted because Marcos wanted to act like a good Catholic president, and neither a president nor a Catholic would be doing the things that he was doing, if they were any good. Marcos even asked forgiveness when Pope John Paul II arrived. He said, "Forgive us, Holy Father, now that you are here. We resolve we shall wipe out all conflicts and set up a society that is harmonious to attain the ends of God." We do the same now. We are committed to creating a society that is harmonious as much as possible, and that is free from dictatorship. We continue to be angry for all of the people, religious or not, who were killed in those days, and whose names are not remembered nowadays. We say their names out loud, and we do not forget them. We fight to keep this from happening again. Thank you for listening, remembering, and getting angry with us today. Yugto is narrated, researched, and written by Sunny and is supported by the Work in Progress team. Sources and any subsequent correction of facts for the episode can be found on the website. Support us on Spotify, Anchor, and YouTube, or email us for any questions at whipinc.ph@gmail.com. Finally, help us get these stories out there by sharing us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or any social media. Join us next fortnight for another episode. And remember, activism is not terrorism. Truth is not terrorism. See you next time, and keep fighting the good fight.